Blog Talk Radio.
Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. It's a new summer era. We don't wanna see the heroes. We fighting against each other. It's the love that we need with one another. You understand? Trust might be love. No. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Gotta get on your grind, don't confuse your mind. Let that dream come true. Stop playing a fool, chatting to my soul. Playing for forgiveness, never get lost in the world of sin. That's while I'm trying my vision. Seeing knowledge is given, knowing what's been hidden. Living life, only good intentions, not playing the victim. Spending my strength to perfection. Success is your best liquid. Becoming one of noble reflection. Positive vibration in the spirit. Turning for the moment with a blessing. Remember this lesson. Truth be told through these confessions. Why you guessing? Stop stressing. Stop stressing. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold.
Good evening, everybody. Happy Sunday. Welcome to another India Morel Dollhouse Radio production of Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We have a few topics to go into tonight. Our first topic will be police. Are they an enemy? Question, that is. Second topic will be more on Jesse Williams, and the third topic will be, again, some more on atheism, which is what I believe we left off on last week. Always more to say on that issue in depth. Anyway, as I'm looking at my calendar, I'll say this. We are moving, we're almost halfway through July, and when I think about that, I think about the fact that we have August, then September, and cold weather right around the corner. But as I was told elsewhere, stay in the day, one day at a time. And in having said that, I want to also, give a shout out to myself, primarily because 9 years ago yesterday was the day that I had gone into that drug and alcohol rehabilitation program. And as I was saying on a previous show that I had done about my recovery situation. And so therefore, as of yesterday, it will have been 9 years ago yesterday that I last had a drink or drug. So we can say 9 years and one day today. Hip, hip, hooray. And I don't see no chance or cause of going back there. Too much stuff to do and too much stuff to think about and consider. So, as I was saying, our first topic will be police. Are they an enemy? I didn't say the, understand, as if it's just one enemy, but I said an enemy. Anyway, I pose that question because, as we have seen previously, and especially this past week. It does, in fact, seem like police are an enemy to urban communities, wherever black folk are. They like to police us. And as others have said, it's almost as if, you know, back during the days of slavery, in a sense, wherein they had the slave patrols constantly on the lookout for runaway Negroes. Really? Slave patrols. And the police today, they seem to, in a real sense, be performing the same function. But then again, one might say, well, back then, were the slave patrols enemies of black people? Think about it. Anyway, so the first issue I want to go into is the Alton, get his name correct, the Alton Sterling situation. I have an article on that. It says here, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. A homeless man made the 911 call that brought police to the convenience store where Alton Sterling was shot dead. A source with knowledge of the investigation told CNN. So initially, as is known, people were wondering, you know, what made the police come there anyway, being that the store owner had said that this guy frequented his store, his premises often, and he had no problem with him being there selling his wares. So the question was, why did the police come there that night? And according to what's being put out now, a homeless man called the police. But again, well, let me go on and finish reading the article, because what I was just going to say is spoken of in the article here. It says that Sterling was selling CDs early Tuesday outside the Triple S Food Mart in Baton Rouge when the homeless man approached him and asked for money. The man was persistent, and Sterling showed him his gun. "I told you to leave me alone," Sterling told the man, according to the source. The homeless man then used his cell phone to call 911, the source said. The details about the 911 call shed new light into the Baton Rouge Police high-profile fatal shooting of Sterling, a 37-year-old black man. The article goes further to say, a graphic cell phone video of the shooting was shared widely on social media, quickly sparking local protests and drawing national attention. Federal authorities have taken charge of the investigation. The article goes further to say that Sterling was shot outside the Baton Rouge convenience store after an encounter with two police officers. The officer can be seen in the video on top of him before shots were fired. One of the crucial next steps will be to determine what happened before the confrontation ensued Tuesday. Well, supposedly we've already been told that. Well, not exactly. Well, as to what happened before the confrontation, we were just told that some homeless man called 911. So I guess they're meaning what happened after the homeless man called 911, and then the police got there, what caused the entanglement, so to speak. What happened there for the police to just grab him, jump on him, evidently the way they did do. And those of us who are knowing, we know. Police don't need no calls just to jump on us. They just jump on us, just saying. Anyway, the article goes further to say that a law enforcement source with knowledge of the investigation told CNN that the officers pulled a gun from Sterling's body at the scene. Well, actually, we all saw that per the video after he was shot and dying. And the article goes further to say that there's also a police body camera footage of the shooting, even though the cameras were dislodged. The cameras continue to record. A law enforcement source told CNN the cameras fell off during the scuffle. Then the article goes further to talk about the attorneys for the family. It says here that attorneys for McMillan, the mother of Sterling's son, are demanding transparency. And I guess they have this in quotes here. Our primary mission is to provide the grieving family with answers they are seeking regarding the senseless shooting death of Alton Sterling. Thanks to multiple videos that captured the horrific incident, we know far more than we typically would. But many questions still remain, attorneys L. Chris Stewart and Justin Bamberg said in a statement. And then it goes further to say that we appreciate the hard work and dedication of the vast majority of members of law enforcement. But when they fail to follow their extensive training and unnecessarily take a life, they must be held accountable. No police officer should be above the law. Well, how many times have that been said? And how many times have we seen that that's definitely not the case? And the article goes further to mention who the two officers were in the shooting death of Alton Sterling. The article goes further to say that Sterling was known as the CD man, a laid-back guy who would sell tunes and DVDs outside the convenience store where he was shot. And it says here further that Mufaha, or Muflahi, the store owner, said he'd known Sterling for 6 years and never saw a confrontation between Sterling and anyone. Sterling never got into fights, he said. And, you know, then they always go to the police have a habit, as we now know, of doing this. They search diligently to see if the guy has any criminal filings against him or her. Or, as to use police parlance, they want to see if he's a dirty bird. That's what they say. Anyway, it does say that in 2009, he was charged with carrying a weapon, a firearm, while in possession of a controlled substance, marijuana. He pleaded guilty 2 years later and was sentenced to 5 years in prison with credit for time served and a recommendation of work release and drug treatment. There's no evidence that officers who responded to the convenience store early Tuesday were aware of his criminal history. But as people are saying, I mean, what difference does that make? I mean, he hadn't committed no crime at that time. I mean, we have to be aware of what's said, when it's said, and why it's said. Really. I mean, shit, I mean, they kill the guy, and then they talk about, they want to tell us about his criminal past as if, come on, you know, the guy wasn't exactly an angel. Well, police aren't angels, because right now, Black people are having to really consider, well, are they the enemy? Not just now having to consider. This has long ago been, how can I put it? What's a good word for that? Have been put into the mind of Black people who live in urban communities. Are the police an enemy? Do they treat us like an enemy? And then some came forth, well, for one, the Black Panther Party came forth and said that they act in our communities like an occupying force. An occupying force meaning or being a military force that's occupying another country. Another country that no doubt is subject to whatever laws of the country to which they belong to. Interesting. But as we know, well, we ought not consider the police a occupying force. We ought to think better of them than just that, because some even say that, you know, that's going a bit overboard to consider police an occupying force in urban areas, or even to consider or even think in terms of if the police are or are not an enemy. But anyway, we're going to go into a music break now. It's like 15 minutes to the hour. And we're going to have our first music break from, we're going to play a song from Lydia Caesar entitled Lifted. So this is Lydia Caesar, her song entitled Lifted. Here we go, and we'll be right back.
Lydia Caesar, got a remix for ya, yeah. Every time you come around, I get so lifted. Ooh, 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 ooh. Got to admit, I'm addicted.
Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We just heard a song from Lydia Caesar entitled Lifted. Lydia Caesar, her song Lifted. Our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. And right now we're on the subject of police. Are they an enemy? And in this subject, I'm now talking about the killing of Alton Sterling, the guy down there in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And just saying, when I was in the military, I knew a guy who was from Baton Rouge. He used to always indicate that he was from Baton Rouge. I guess that's a really popular place down there in Louisiana. I guess like Brooklyn or Bronx here in New York, well known. But anyway, there's more on another article here that I have. It says that criminalizing the hustle, policing poor people's survival strategies from Eric Garner to Alton Sterling. You know, that's an issue there. But then again, even concerning, you know, policing poor people's survival strategies, concerning Eric Garner, some people say that he wasn't even selling cigarettes, not on that day. And I guess being that he probably had sold cigarettes on other days, I guess they just threw that in there as an indication that, see, he was doing something that was illegal. Just out MFing rages. But anyway, you know, there's a lot of talk also about the killing of Alton Sterling, such as, you know, if he did or did not have a gun. And as we know, per the video, he did have a gun, but it was in his pocket, and based upon the video that I saw, he wasn't reaching for it at all. And further, based upon the video that I saw, especially the second video that they had put out, his arm where the, how can I put it? Let me say it this way. The arm that he may have used to get his gun from the pocket was under the car anyway, and not next to his pocket. And like we saw where the other hand was in the process of his last movements, his last breath. We saw how that other hand was shaking in the air, so to speak. Because, hey, just awful, just awful. But also, just saying, before I move on, that morning, I guess after that killing had taken place that night, the next morning, maybe it was Wednesday morning, I got on Facebook and I had seen that Facebook friend of mine, I always mention her, Dr. Stacy Patton, she had posted something about that video, and she was telling her Facebook friends, don't even look at it. She said, you know, for your own good, don't even look at it. And, you know, actually, I took her advice. I said, no, if she's saying don't look at it, I probably don't need to look at it. And I wasn't, and I didn't, not then. But I sat back, had my coffee, morning time it was, just got up, showered, all that good stuff. And now I'm sitting back, and I figured I'd watch some news. And that's what was on the news, the Alton Sterling killing. And then, therefore, I did see the video. Tore up my whole day, honestly. It messed up my whole day. Yes, I did. I mean, just seeing the first video and then seeing the second video, it was even more outrageous, more horrendous. I mean, because they actually, oh, it was just awful. They showed, I mean, that's when I saw, you know, the world where his other hand, where his arm was under the vehicle, in my opinion, based upon what I saw, and then the other hand was basically up in the air. And they also have shown that cop take a gun out of his pocket. Some suggest maybe the cop put it in his pocket, but neither here nor there. A gun was recovered. But then again, as is known, he had a permit to carry because, as they say, that area there is an open carry state wherein a person is allowed to have a gun on their person. And he was legit like that, but it didn't matter. But it didn't matter. And secondly, I mean, the cops evidently didn't even ask him if he had a gun or not because I'm quite sure. Well, I can't say I'm quite sure, but I can only surmise that in a situation like that, he knows he's legal. That's just like, you know, we driving and a cop pull up on us talking about license and registration. What are we going to do, not give it to him? No, we're going to give him what he asked for because he stopped us, whatever, with cause or without cause, but we're going to give him what he asked for. So, therefore, my thinking is that if in a state where you have a permit to carry and you are legit and do have that permit to carry, if a police person asks you for that, you're going to give it to him so he can get the F out of your face and move along so you can move along. But anyway, it doesn't – well, we don't know if the cop did or not – did or did not ask him for his gun that was called in that he had. We don't know. We don't know. And I guess we will never know. But anyway, going on into this article here, this article is talking about policing poor people's survival strategies. Some more words of this article says that over the past few decades, cities have turned to policing. Just a second. Okay, it says here, over the past few decades, cities have turned to policing to fulfill two functions, to surveil and discipline black populations hardest hit by economic shifts and to collect revenue in the form of fines. A professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University and the author of Knocking the Hustle against the Neo, well, it says here, let me back up and read that again. It says here that, hit by economic shifts and to collect revenue in the form of fines. Emails Lester Spence, a professor of political science. That's what he's saying. Then it says further that of the black men most likely to be left out of the formal economy who have to engage in various illegal hustles to make ends meet are far more likely to suffer from police violence than other black men. Just a second, I'm trying to get my situation straight here. I don't understand what's up with my laptop. It keeps freezing up on me, making things most difficult. Maybe it'll jump back to where it should be. Let's see what happens here. Anyway, by this professor saying something like he just said. He said that here. He says here that far more are. He says that that those who are left out of the formal economy, who have to engage in various illegal hustles to make ends meet, are far more likely to suffer from police violence than other black men. That could be true. Maybe it's not true. the terms of in terms of suffering from police violence, because in a real sense, as we know, it doesn't matter if a black person has a job or don't have a job. That's not known by that police person until what? In the most extreme case, once the individual is dead, and then they check his record and find out, oh, he was working, he was working somewhere, you know. So, whatever. It doesn't matter if I disagree or don't disagree with what this professor is saying. But come on, reality dictates what is, not suppositions and or theories. But anyway, well, so that's what this guy here said, and he goes further to say that. Jobs were scarce for those with a criminal record. That's true. Like Sterling, they can simply be out of reach. With Sterling, things were worse. He had to register as a sex offender after being convicted of having had sex with a teenager when he was no older than 21. His name and face still publicly recorded online more than 15 years after the incident, I guess, because that's the situation there. I myself do know guys who have registered being in prison and got out. They had to register to be registered as a sex offender, but that's another issue. That was passed. I mean, and then again, like the other article has said previously, the cops didn't know that. Well, then again, who knows? Maybe they did. Maybe they were that much hot and heavy on him to know all about him. Who is this guy that we see every night out here selling CDs in front of this place? What is he doing? You know? Anyway, this article here goes further into the economic issue of urban areas. And then kind of, I guess it's more so suggesting the cause for over-policing of urban areas. Because of a lack of jobs, people, not just men, but people in urban areas, they have to, you know, resort to other means and modes to make a living. And unfortunately, all those means and modes are illegal. Or if not, well, yes, illegal, because if the cops come upon you, they can stop you from doing what you're doing. And based upon who the police person is, they can take you to jail. But anyway, moving right along, on to something different, but just a second. I'm still trying to get this situation straight with the laptop, because if I don't, I can't play any music. That's the situation here. And I'd rather get it straight so I can play the music and, you know, not, how can I say, hog the microphone. I'm not like that at all. I really am not. I'd rather do what I'm supposed to do as opposed to what I want to do. But then again, I want to do what I'm supposed to do, not even about what I want to do, one of those situations. But anyway, I also wanted to read into the show an article that a Facebook friend had posted on my timeline, an article written by Michelle Alexander. She's the one who had written the book entitled The New Jim Crow, talking about primarily the prison industrial complex. And also talking about how, well, in a real sense, those drug laws, or how, well, the war on drug laws, she was saying, in essence, those were things that were implemented to entrap black people in urban communities to feed them to the prison system, to feed them into the prison pipeline. From the community, from out of the community into a jail community, prison community, just out MFing wages. But anyway, Michelle Alexander, just a second here. Let me see what I can do again, because I keep going back to this, trying to engage my laptop, but it's looking like eventually I'm just going to have to get another laptop. But then again, I just bought this laptop, and it came up for me. Thank you very much. Anyway, this article by Michelle Alexander, I'm going to go on and read it into the show, because I think it's most interesting and needs to be put out there and let it go viral, or, you know, it's probably going viral anyway per the internet. But then again, everybody should know about this article that she has written. She says here that I have struggled to find words to express what I thought and felt as I watched the videos of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile being killed by the police. Last night I wanted to say something that hadn't been said 100 times before. It finally dawned on me that there is nothing to say that hasn't been said before. That's most true. That's most true. Because what we are going through now, people, we have been going through since we got here. And just saying, I had mentioned earlier about, you know, the slave patrols, the paddy rollers, as they call them, that's the function of the police today. Case in point, Alton, let me get his last name again, Alton Sterling. The police had to police him. I mean, what he was doing wasn't exactly illegal, but yet they felt that, you know, they could do something to him because he's doing what he's doing. Just outrageous, outrageous. Anyway, she says that as I was preparing to write about the oldness of all this and share some wisdom passed down from struggles of earlier eras, I heard on the news that 11 officers had been shot in Dallas, several killed from sniper fire. My fingers froze on the keys. I could not bring myself to recycle old truths. Something more is required. But what? That's what everybody's asking now. What? What do we do now? I think we all know deep down that something more is required of us now. The truth is difficult to face because it's inconvenient and deeply unsettling. And yet silence isn't an option. On any given day, there's always something I'd rather be doing than facing the ugly, racist underbelly of America. I know that I am not alone, but I also know that the families of the slain officers and the families of all those who have been killed by police would rather not be attending funerals. And I'm sure that many who refused to ride segregated buses in Montgomery after Rosa Parks stood her ground wished they could have taken the bus rather than walk miles in protest day after day for a whole year. But they knew they had to walk if change was ever going to come. They were going to have to walk, and so do we. What it means to walk today will be different for different people and different groups and in different places. I am asking myself tonight what I need to do in the months and years to come to walk my walk with greater courage. It's a question that requires some time and reflection. I hope it's a question we are all asking ourselves. In recent years, I have come to believe that truly transformative change depends more on thoughtful creation of new ways of being than reflexive reactions to the old. What is happening now is very, very old. We have some habits of responding to this familiar pain and trauma that are not serving us well. In many respects, it's amazing that we endure at all. I am inspired again and again by so much of the beautiful, brilliant, and daring activism that is unfolding all over the country. Yet, I also know that more is required than purely reactive protests and politics. A profound shift in our collective consciousness must occur, a shift that makes possible a new America. I know people that our criminal justice system, well, let me read that again. I know many people believe that our criminal justice system can be fixed by smart people and smart policies. President Obama seems to think this way. He suggested yesterday that police-community relations can be improved meaningfully by a task force he created last year. Yes, a task force. I used to believe, or more so, I used to think like that. I don't anymore. I no longer believe that we can fix the police as though the police are anything other than a mirror reflecting back to us the true nature of our democracy. Excuse me. We cannot fix the police without a revolution of values and radical change to the basic structure of our society. Of course, important policy changes can and should be made to improve police practices. But if we're serious about having peace officers rather than a domestic military at war with his own people, we're going to have to get honest with ourselves about who our democracy actually serves and protects. Consider this. Philando Castile had been stopped 31 times and charged with more than 60 minor violations, resulting in thousands of dollars in fines before his last fatal encounter with the police. Alton Sterling was arrested because he was hustling, selling CDs to get by. He was unable to work in the legal economy due to his felony record. His act of survival was treated by the police as a major crime, apparently punishable by death. How many people on Wall Street have been arrested for their crimes, large and small, crimes of greed and fraud that nearly bankrupt the global economy and destroyed the future of millions of families? How many politicians have been prosecuted for taking millions of dollars from private prisons, prison guard unions, pharmaceutical companies, oil companies, tobacco companies, the NRA, and Wall Street, and Wall Street banks, and doing their bidding for them, killing us softly? Oh, that's right. Taking millions from those folks isn't even a crime. Democrats and Republicans do it every day. Our entire political system is financed by wealthy private interests buying politicians and making sure the rules are written in their favor. But selling CDs or loose cigarettes in America, that's treated as a serious crime, especially if you're black. For that act of survival, you can be wrestled to the ground, choked to death, or shot at point-blank range. Our entire system of government is designed to protect and serve the interests of the most powerful while punishing, controlling, and exploiting the least advantaged. This is not hyperbole, and this is not new. What is new is that we're now watching all of this on YouTube and Facebook, streaming live, as imagined super predators are brought to heel. 50 years ago, our country was forced to look at itself in the mirror when television stations broadcast Bloody Sunday, the day state troopers and a sheriff's posse brutally attacked civil rights activists marching for voting rights in Selma. Excuse me. Those horrifying images, among others, helped to turn public opinion in support of the civil rights movement. Perhaps the images we've seen in recent days will make some difference. It's worth remembering, though, that none of the horrifying images from the Jim Crow era would have changed anything in a highly strategic, courageous movement if a highly strategic, courageous movement had not existed that was determined to challenge a deeply entrenched system of racial and social control. The nation was founded on the idea that some lives don't matter. Freedom and justice for some, not all. That's the foundation. Yes, progress has been made in some respects, but it hasn't come easy. There are unfinished revolutions waiting to be won. That's what Michelle Alexander wrote in the aftermath of these killings, and also in the aftermath of what had taken place there in Dallas, Texas. And just saying, not necessarily the news today, but again on Facebook, I have seen they have shown a video of some young black girl addressing the crowd. A pretty black girl too, she was. I mean, just gorgeous. Just saying, neither here nor there. But anyway, she was addressing the crowd about, you know, what needs to be done, and all of a sudden, about three or four policemen, you know, body armored down, just rushed upon her. At least they didn't tackle her to the ground, but they did rush upon her and just, you know, grabbed her, you know, manhandled her, so to speak, and put cuffs on her, like she committed some kind of crime. But in essence, all she was doing was what? Exercising her constitutional rights that we are told that we have, or more so, that we've read that we have, because we can read today. Yes, we can. We can read today, and we read the Constitution, those of us who have. And we have that right to peaceably assemble. But yet, it's the police who, what, want to infringe upon that right? Not a citizen, like it was back in the 60s, because back in the 60s, the Civil Rights Movement era, you had your average, everyday citizen preventing us, blocking us from enjoying our rights to do this or that. You know, throwing stuff on us. We're sitting at a lunch counter. They come in and smash stuff in our faces. That was an average citizen. But today, the police are doing this. So, back to that question. Are the police an enemy? Anyway, when I had saw that, I had written a beautiful black woman only doing what our Constitution states we have a right to do. So, why was she accosted and then placed in handcuffs and walked off by police? Police can't be here to protect our rights, but someone else's right. Whose? And basically, Michelle Alexander, she just spoke about that in that article that I read. And it's so unfortunate that the police seem to really be here not to protect our rights or to ensure that we are able to engage our rights. No. That's not what they're here for when push comes to shove, when we feel that we have to agitate for rights that we feel we don't have. But again, I mean, that goes against what the foundations of the democracy in which we're supposed to be living in. But anyway, I'm moving right along. Unfortunately, I know I was supposed to have played or have had a music break, but like I said, my laptop is effing up on me. Basically, it's doing what it wants to do when it wants to do it. So, but moving right along. Excuse me. Okay, the next issue that I'm going into now is the, what was that guy's name? Philando Castile. Him. I mean, just saying, before I go further into this article here, I do want to say that the first time that I had seen this via Facebook, I was on my producer's timeline, or what she had posted came to my timeline, and I looked at it. And just saying, I looked at it. As I'm looking at it, you know, that whole car scene with that girl, that woman, you know, talking about what she's talking about, saying what she's saying, and letting us know that she is, in fact, video recording this and live streaming it on Facebook. And the way she was talking, I'm thinking, what, is this a hoax? Honestly, I'm thinking, is this a hoax? Is this real? Is this just some bullshit that somebody put up here, you know, just to get likes? So, you know, I watched it. And basically, I didn't watch it to the end. Why? Because to me, she was speaking basically too calm to be in a real situation like that. I mean, that's how calm to me she was. If that situation was real, I did feel that she couldn't be that calm. So this got to be just something somebody. I didn't believe it. But then as the night went on, I began to see more people posting it. And I said, well, damn, I guess this shit is real. And then I watched it, you know, to the end, and I thought, wow. But all I'm saying there is that I didn't think it was real in the beginning. I thought it was, you know, just something, as I said, that somebody just put on Facebook just to get some likes. How wrong I was. Because of what? A lot of people want to talk about perception being reality. My perception definitely was not reality there, but that's another issue about perception being reality. But anyway, what I have here about this issue, well, we've all seen it per her video. It says here that a woman live streamed the heartbreaking moments after her boyfriend was shot and killed by a cop in Minnesota last Wednesday. Minnesota, wasn't that where Prince was living? Minnesota, again, is coming up in the news. But anyway, in a Facebook video, they say here that her name is LaVish Reynolds, but she said her name is Diamond Reynolds. Anyway, LaVish Reynolds claims that the couple were pulled over in Minnesota, St. Paul area, for a busted taillight, and that her boyfriend, Philando Castile, was shot four or five times. She said that Castile told the officer he was carrying a permitted firearm and had been reaching for his wallet before the officer opened fire. A St. Anthony police officer can be seen outside the car, his gun drawn on Castile. Reynolds, who liked Castile, is black, described the cop as Asian. I told him, and like supposedly the cop is saying, I told him not to reach for it. I told him to get his hands off it. And because what, he didn't comply, he was shot and killed four times. And the thing is, what's even more egregious was that a small child was in that car as well. A small black child was in the back seat of that car. That cop thought nothing about that, because he thought nothing about the people with whom he was confronting. And we can say, okay, and he wasn't a white guy, he was Asian. So we can think, what, that the like Asian have the same perception of us that Caucasians have of us? And if that is so, it don't take long to figure out why. But like AY to that could be because basically they bought into the BS. They bought into the BS, and a question still there could be why. We could say why, for economic reasons. To be uplifted above what? African Americans? Because if they hate African Americans as much as Caucasians do, that's a plus for them. And by the same token, that goes that also extends to the black cop as well, to the cop on the force who is African American, who feels as we are told, those of us who are told this and those of us who have come to recognize this, oftentimes the African American police officer will treat another African American much worse than his white counterpart, primarily because he wants to fit in, which is asinine, totally stupid. Sellout. That's what that's all about. And then also in this article here, it does say that near the end of the live streaming, Reynolds starts to scream as she sits handcuffed in the back of the police cruiser with her young daughter. And this is something that really brought tears to my eyes. I don't know if my heart was broken. I don't know that. You know, but anyway, but it did bring tears to my eyes when I did hear the little girl's voice say, "It's okay, mommy. It's okay. I'm right here with you. I'm here with you." Oh man, that tore me up. I'll just be honest. It tore me up. Really, really. But I guess that's I don't know the nature. I won't say the nature of children per se, but I will say that perhaps that's the nature of some children. Children, understand, have the capacity to empathize with someone else. Wherein, as we know, some adults don't have that capacity to empathize with someone else. Because in a real sense, if that Asian cop, well, I'm saying Asian cop because that's what they're saying it was, but Asian cop, Caucasian cop, black cop, if they had the capacity to be empathetic, a lot of these things that do take place negative, especially, and then again, in extreme situations like this, they would never happen. They would never happen. Because how can you, just trash somebody that you have respect for? Can I say that? I guess I can. I can say that, but is it correct to say that? How can you just trash somebody that you have respect for? And then therefore that you feel something for? Just outrageous, outrageous. And still honor or into this article here about this guy from Philando. We can say what? That in a real sense, both of these situations, because this is what I have thought about in a real sense. I thought about the situation of both of them in both these situations, they both were armed and they both had a right to carry a firearm. We can assume that they had all of the necessary paperwork because if not, that would be known also by now that they were in possession of an illegal firearm, primarily illegal because they didn't have the necessary documentation to carry a legal firearm. But it almost seems like what? That once the police person was aware that they had a firearm and then also black, it's like, no. This can't be. We got to put this down. How dare he have a firearm? Because if he got a firearm, well, I guess we can't really do him as we would do him. I guess we could say, in a normal situation? But then no. That's a way to think. But then there's more thinking that goes into that. But to back up out of where I went to there, what I was going to say is that it's almost as if just by the mere fact of them having a firearm, to both cops in both situations, that's something that, in their minds, something that just should not be. And therefore, both of them warranted death for having a firearm on their person. Outrageous. Just totally outrageous. And then now, having said that, to go on into something different but still on the same issue, you know, with this guy, Philando, let me see, I'm trying to get his whole name here. I want Philando Castile. In his case, as his mother has said, I've seen the video on CNN. His mother was saying that all his life, she was telling him, when you're stopped by the police, comply. Just comply. And it's obvious that he took what his mother told him to heart and was doing that. According to his girlfriend, he told the cop, hey, I have a firearm on my person. And then pop, 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 pop. That's what happened. So in saying that, in terms of, harping on what his mother told him about comply, that goes back to something that I had said before in the show as well. That when the police come up on us being black in a real sense, and he being a case in point, this Philando Castile, it doesn't matter what we do or don't do. It don't matter what we do or don't do. I got to say that again. What matters is what's in that cop's mind. That's what matters. And then because that is the real situation, we can only hope that this motherfucker ain't crazy. Sorry for cursing, but that's the way it is. We can only hope that this MF isn't a lunatic with a gun in his hand and isn't so imbued or overdosed on racism that therefore now we have being black. Well, not necessarily being black, but because of this guy's mindset, we now lose our lives over nothing. Over nothing. Anyway, so, and having said that, I also want to read out. Well, right now it looks like my window is back up, so I'm going to go on and play some music. Okay, this is a song from Mila J entitled "Diamonds," featuring Drake and Future from their CoverGirl mixtape. So here we go. We'll be right back.
Fucked up right now, but got the jewelry on me, now I'm trying to keep it tight. Now my nigga, he been tripping on me all week. Now I'm trying to get my mind off the shit, and you know what I need. Yeah, and I don't give a damn who sees you trying to be. Slipping on down, carry on for no reason. Popping tags up an echelon for no reason. Seen this bad little Jones, she was perfect. I let her push the phone right now if she worth it. Falling in the middle of the club, no jersey. He don't want no liquor cause he been drinking that dirty. Bring the eights by the case, my bitch is with me. Bring some ice for my cup, my drink with me. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing.
Talking up a storm like you usually do. Talking to your friends like you usually do. Telling them I never spend time with you. It's hard to find the time we've been
slipping on down, carry on for no reason. Popping tags up an echelon for no reason. Seen this bad little Jones, she was perfect. I let her push the floor right now if she worth it. Falling in the middle of the club, no. Bring the eights by the case, my bitch is with me. Bring some ice for my cup, my drink with me. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing. Diamonds, 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 diamonds on me dancing.
I'm familiar with this cash flow. And if you took it, you can vouch for me. I did it my way, you can vouch for me. I put the cocaine and the powder in the couch on me. Whenever I step outside the house, I get the Glocky on me. Bad bitches wanna come by the paparazzi on me. I got so many bad bitches that I barely wanna. I'm barely paying attention, baby, I need substance. I know you spent some time putting on your makeup and your outfit with
Welcome back to India Morel Dollhouse Radio. You listen to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We just heard a song from Mila J entitled Diamonds featuring Drake and Future from the CoverGirl mixtape. Our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. Call in and let me hear what you have to say or what you might disagree with me about. Or what you can add to what I'm thinking, all those things or any of those things. Anyway, before I left, I was talking about the thing about, you know, people telling their sons or daughters what to do when accosted by the police. But like I'm saying, it doesn't matter what we do or don't do. It's up to that cop and his mentality. But anyway, in reference to that, Dr. Stacey Patton, she thinks the same as I think, because what she had written in reference to that is this. She says that in a real sense, this is not about black behavior. In other words, it's not about how we being black behave in these or those kinds of situations. She says that the takeaway message here is make cops feel comfortable with your blackness and you will get back home. Imagine that. Make cops feel comfortable with your blackness. But how can that be when it's your blackness that he or she is already upset about to the hilt? It's your blackness that caused them to stop you in the first place. So in a real sense, it's already on. It's on. God. Anyway, she says further, but the Minnesota shooting proves that we will still be killed even if we follow helpful tips like these. White people can mouth off at the cops, spit at them, throw things at them, tear up their tickets, and fling things out the window, cite their constitutional rights, and still manage to not get shot during traffic stops. Is that the way it is or isn't? Anybody who knows and isn't in denial knows that that's exactly the way it is. I haven't seen one white woman who was so livid. They had approached her car. Oh, it's a long story as to how that came about, but they approached her car. She was in it, and because they spoke to her, she was halfway out that window screaming at them. I'm telling you, her body was in and out of the car. I lie to you not. When I saw that, because of this and that, I had to chuckle. But then again, I thought to myself, damn, if that was somebody black, they would have snatched him or her all the way out of that car. But the thing was, they left her and left her alone and drove off. Like I said, if that had been, a black person, they would have snatched him or her the rest of the way out of that car. But like I'm saying, her body was halfway in and halfway out of that car, and she was still screaming at them because they had approached her car. About what they approached her car about. And in a real sense, they were in the right. Because in a real sense, I can kind of quickly tell you how all that came about, but I'll make the story shorter than what it's not. I had called the cop on her because I was working in this store, and she had been fired previously from that store, and it had been said that if she comes back in there to call the cops, because she's not supposed to be in there. She is trespassing, therefore. And because her and I had this little thing, negative thing going, I made sure I called the cop on her, and the cops came. And she had already left the store by the time they got there. But when they came in, I told them, yeah, she's over there. And they walked over there to her. And that's, but I loved it. But neither here nor there. But like I'm saying, what happened, half her body was out of that car as she was screaming on them, screaming, red in the face and everything. Wow. Anyway, so moving right along. Having some conversation on Facebook, I was having with some people. This was said here. It was talking about Philando Castile, and it talked about how he was an employee for 15 years, cooking for kids and things of that nature. And a friend's Facebook friend, I was in the conversation, or I was on her timeline, and a friend of a Facebook friend had said, yes, this is getting worse, or we have more cameras. And then to that, I have responded, it's always been just like it is. It's just that now it's being seen with other eyes than the eyes of the victims. In the mid-70s, a movie came out entitled Cornbread Earl and Me. The movie depicted how police kill black people and then swear that they saw something shiny in the victim's hand, lying from beginning to end. Even with the advent of the video recording, they still lie. But, like, remember that? Those of you who might remember back in the day, 10 years ago, something like that, the story wasn't, I feared for my life. But basically, fearing for the life was implied, but it wasn't a thing about outright, I fear for my life. It was more so, oh, he has something shiny in his hand. That was the rationale 10, 20 years ago, he has something, he or she has something shiny in their hands. Really. And then this person had responded to what I had written by saying, yes, I agree. Things are actually getting better, believe it or not. And then she says, in L.A., blacks were killed on a weekly basis, if not daily. They were shot in the back. Many had concrete embedded in their wounds as they were shot in the back while lying face down on the sidewalk. Really criminal, and now we get to see just how badly it really is. Body cameras for all of us. And then what I have responded back, I responded back by saying, and we're amazed that some black person will pick up a gun someday and instead of shooting some other black person will decide instead to shoot a police person. Hell, he knows he's going to die anyway. Oppression oppresses. Oppression can make one mad beyond comprehension. That's what I have wrote back to that, and the conversation kind of went on, but I'm moving right along. And I also want to say still concerning the guy Castile. Yeah, they have produced a long rap sheet on him. They went as far back as from 1996 on up to 2016. Out MF Enrages. Just to prove that what? He was a dirty bird. And therefore what? The killing wasn't so innocent as it appeared. They're off their MF and rockers. So moving right along. Now I'm going to go on into the Dallas shooting. Five police officers slain. Suspect ID'd as Army vet Micaiah Johnson. And as we know here, is we basically know about most of that because that seems to have taken precedent over the previous two killings. And you can't help but think, I mean, is that by design? I'm not saying by design. That those, you know, designed by, let's say, our government, I wouldn't go so far as to say that. But then again, that may not be so far-fetched. Because, it's a long story. But anyway, we all know about what happened there in Dallas with this guy, Micaiah Johnson. Him. We don't know if it was him or not. But, let me just go on and read what I have here. It says here that the sniper who fatally shot five Dallas cops and wounded seven more in the deadliest attack on a police force since 9/11 is an Army veteran who targeted white officers to avenge the recent police-involved shootings of black people. Micaiah X. Johnson, a 25-year-old who served 6 years in the Army Reserves, died early Friday when police deployed a robot to blow up an explosive device in the parking garage where the gunman was holed up. I don't know. I mean, we can only, what do we know other than what we're told? And being that, as people are saying, being that this guy, Micaiah Johnson, is dead, we'll never know what really happened and or what he really said. But it talks about here how attempted negotiations had failed. And then they had employed, you know, a robot, a drone. Well, not necessarily a drone, but I guess a robot because it didn't fly. It was, I guess, on four wheels. It didn't fly as a drone would fly, I guess, because it flies. That makes it a drone, I guess. But I guess if it just rolls on the ground, it's a robot. It's robotic. But anyway, you know, now people are wondering, you know, if that was actually legal for them to deploy such a device against this guy. And then again, you know, why couldn't they have taken him in? Because, you know, I wonder about that myself. I mean, because people talk about that guy dialing a wolf or roof. They captured him. But anyway, I had even gotten into some conversation with some people on Facebook concerning that. But before I go there, I want to also say that I find it interesting that they are talking about how going through his Facebook account and I guess his phones and other means of communication, they're finding out with whom he had been in contact with and or talking to, and on Facebook, they're seeing, you know, what he was doing there. And it seems like that he had engaged with some black radicals on Facebook, and now they're acting like these black radicals on Facebook are like Al-Qaeda or like ISIS. Outrageous. Outrageous. It's, but we have to listen to see what's going to go on from here, okay? But already is looking like at this point just being critical about this system that we live in, and then also being critical about racism, that might soon become a crime. I mean, we just have to watch and see what's going to happen, because already they have already said that it turns out that he was, they said friends, or he had met with Professor Griff, formerly of Public Enemy, and I think Professor Griff currently is in some kind of black radical organization, you know, black radical organization. I shouldn't say it like that, but some freedom prone organization. Professor Griff is with some conscious building movement. Professor Griff is with, you know, trying to tell black people the situation in which they are living in, and I guess trying to provide them with a sense of well-being, and you know how to overcome, you know, the, how can I put it, the a bad term is trap that we find ourselves in. Professor Griff is down with people who are doing stuff such as that, but then now they're trying to link Professor Griff with this guy, saying that they have a picture of him and Professor Griff together. But they may have a picture of him and Professor Griff together, but that don't mean that they knew each other. Professor Griff is basically a celebrity in this state, and anybody would like to have a picture taken with Professor Griff. That would be on the same level of me taking a picture with my producer, India Morrell. I would love to, as if, you know, I say, look, I know her, you know, whatever. But, you know, stuff like that, I mean, no, they happen to have been in a picture together. That don't mean they knew each other, not at all. But let them tell it. Yes, it does. Anyway, I got into a conversation on Facebook, on one of my Facebook friends' timelines, about the use of this robot to kill this guy, if that's even true. But anyway, it started out like so. This one guy said, you know, in favor of them having deployed this apparatus to do what it did. This guy says, every big city has a robot like this. It's how they get rid of suspicious packages. Detroit has two. Then I responded by saying suspicious packages, not people. One can't communicate with a package. A package does not need food to survive. A human being is reasonable up to a certain point and or after a certain point. What I meant there is that, you know, a package, you know, you can't talk to a package, but a human being, you can. And then also a package doesn't need food to survive, in the sense of how long could he have stayed in that position where he was. And then again, I mean, how much ammunition did he have? A 3-day supply of ammunition? I don't think so. So, I mean, they could have waited out until he, what, finished firing. They were all behind sufficient cover to avoid being hit. And then again, in terms of a human being is reasonable up to a certain point and or after a certain point, that's it right there. Once he get hungry or run out of ammo, what's he going to do? Well, he might save a bullet for himself, but that's another issue. But once he run out of ammo, he got to surrender. Anyway, this guy says this tactic, justified or not, someone else has said this tactic, justified or not, sets an ugly precedent. We'll never know the truth about this one. That's true. And then someone else has said, you really can't waste time. This guy wasn't going out. Desperate times call for desperate measures, especially when you have IEDs around the parking garage. He's talking about, when he talked about having IEDs around the parking garage, he's talking about what was said that the shooter said, that he had explosives planted here and planted there. But according to what we were told or not told, They didn't find any actual explosives around there. So did that guy say that or not say that? But here this guy is talking about, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures, especially when you have IEDs around the parking garage. But then what I replied when he said that, I said, you know, that was the rationale of the shooter. You think it wasn't? That's a cliche. Anyway, an old adage. It may have been true when uttered for that particular situation, but it doesn't mean it's always true for the situation that one considers desperate. A situation that one individual assumes desperate may not appear as desperate to another. And then again, like in this situation, you had a lot of people standing around, you know, inputting ideas and their analysis of this situation. And like, so therefore, my thought is, you know, they couldn't have come up with a better way to have taken him in. We can say what, for questioning as to, you know, why'd you do it? Who was with you? You know, what's going on? All those things. But no, they just decided to just take him out. And then I wrote further, just saying, being he didn't have or wasn't reported that the shooter had a machine that made bullets or projectiles, it's obvious he'd have run out of ammunition eventually. Doubtlessly, there were many ways to have taken this guy in as opposed to out. However, I understand. I told him that I understand. You're upset right now. And then he responded by asking, but how long do you wait, especially knowing the possibility that he himself said he placed bombs around the city? It's not a cliche, old adage. Put yourself in the position. You're in a race. You're in a race against time. No one knows how many casings he had. There's really no time to waste. He wasn't going alive. He was going to shoot himself, or cops would. And then some person wrote, I think it was an awesome idea, blow him up. Then I wrote back to that person. I said, God bless you. You just set clear thinking back a whole lot of years. And then after that, this guy had also said, he says to me, so wait, James. What you're saying or perceiving is all police are unlawful. So does that mean all doctors are unlawful for giving people meds they don't need, but end in death? And then to that I had responded, no, that would be like saying all Caucasians are racist, or that all Africans are devoid of good judgment. If unconstitutional laws exist in areas where African Americans reside and police are empowered to enforce those laws, what would that mean in terms of the citizenry of that area and the police them for the purpose of enforcement of those ordinances or laws? Then I said, drastic time deserve drastic measures. Then I said, no, you said desperate times call for desperate measures. And then he said, then I don't quite understand what you mean. I don't quite understand what you're getting at. And that basically what you elaborated was saying what you said. That I responded by saying, to make it plain, you probably don't live in an area wherein everywhere one looks, you see a sign reading, no loitering. Doesn't such a sign have something to do with negating freedom of movement and or assembly? Stop and frisk. Doesn't this law or ordinance negate in some way the Fourth Amendment? A person being secure in their person and or property? Somehow, some way, when it comes to African Americans, the Constitution can easily be debated and then negated. Yet, when it comes to Caucasians in this country, there's no debate about the Constitution in areas wherein you all live. And then he responded by saying, I do know loitering. I have got a ticket for this in high school. Is it negating freedom? Maybe. But businesses don't like people that stand in front of their businesses. Stop and frisk. There's a time and reason for that. I've gotten frisked too. Listen, we all deal with racially motivated things, and I understand what you're saying. I do, but to say that it's racially, that doesn't really is such Well, he kind of cursed there. I'm not going to curse there. He went further to say, I get where you're coming from. I've said the same thing, but let's act like just African Americans are subject to unfair discrimination. Discrimination knows no boundaries. And then this other person said, I'm Mexican American, and you don't hear us bitching and complaining about, well, bitching and complaining and acting like everyone owes us something. I'm getting sick and tired of people playing the race card. Many more races are targeted, not just blacks. And then I had responded by saying, discrimination knows no boundaries. And then I asked the question, discrimination knows no boundaries? I say, yet it penetrates further into some boundaries than others. And I said to this other person, are you a Mexican? Yet you're talking about playing the race card and everybody owes you something talking points? I wonder where you glean such profound insights. I wrote further, discrimination has no boundaries. Again, I wrote that. I said, sure it does. It begins and ends where those who discriminate want it to. Actually, there's nothing wrong with discrimination of and in itself. Hence, there's wise discrimination, and then there's ignorant discrimination. Which discrimination are you referring to that has no boundaries? Yes, I engage in conversations like that via Facebook. Yes, I do. And then I have written further here concerning the shooter having been blown up. I had written this. I said, interesting how we're quick to give rationale for police violence wherein African Americans are consigned to reside. No, let me read that again. I said, interesting how we're quick to give a rationale for police violence wherein African Americans are consigned to reside, but are mentally blind when police violence is turned back on the initiators of the violence. This is a conversation that should be had after the aftermath of the Dallas, Texas happening. The media isn't allowing this kind of conversation. Then, too, how many are able to think deeply and unflinchingly on the issue to have this kind of conversation? What conversation is it I'm referring to? Basically, it's the same conversation that wasn't had by the majority of the majority of the American public during the times of African American enslavement, i.e., especially at the time of the Nat Turner revolt. No one wanted to understand the prompting of Mr. Turner's mindset, which really wasn't difficult to understand. He and those who looked like him were slaves, used and abused without pity by the American people and American law. At that time, as now, it wasn't even thought black people had a right to protest or even be upset about the abuses heaped upon them. This kind of conversation would have more of the components of healing than any that's being heard by the established media at this time. I hope for change in the discussion. By the way, who was Nat Turner? He was the slave who led a slave revolt. It said he and his band of followers went from house to house, killing slave owners and their families, sparing no one, men, women, or children. The acts of violence in this revolt were horrendous. Yet, how much more horrendous were the centuries-long enslavement which he and others had been subjected to? Again, this conversation needs to be had. However, I'm not talking about slavery per se. My meaning is the conversation that needs to be had about today. Yet today's conditions had its antecedents in slavery. Or in other words, yet today's conditions has its antecedents in slavery. In other words, what went on then is going on now. Is something like Farrakhan once said a long time ago, the names and faces have changed, but the game is still the same. Our faces weren't the faces that were in slavery, but they looked like ours. They were our great-great-great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents and cousins and nieces and all that, generations back then, just like now. So moving right along. Okay, what I wanted to I also wanted to read here something else that I had written in reference to this shooter here. Because the media claims that the shooter was a decorated war veteran. And when I read that, I just had to think about what they were saying, a decorated war veteran. What I had written was, the heading of this story says Johnson was a decorated Army veteran. Well, there's decorated and then there's decorated. He received the Army Achievement Award. That was him having been awarded for something, but decorated? Anyone having been in the Army knows an Army Achievement Award looks good for promotion purposes, i.e., in your Army personnel file, but that's about it. One might get a little ribbon for it to wear on your uniform, but again, that's about it. Decorated? Surely, we've seen guys in the movies with one side of their Army uniform jacket looking like a Christmas tree. Well, this wouldn't have been Johnson's Army uniform jacket. In the Army Reserves, and then I go further to write that, in the Army Reserves for 6 years in a private first class, that's not a good look for any soldier. It hasn't yet been mentioned how he qualified on the rifle range, marksman, sharpshooter, or expert. Expert being the highest qualification, marksman being the lowest qualification. This can easily be known per his Army records. If we can be told he was a decorated soldier, surely we should be told of his rifle qualifications. And then I said, hey, y'all, this is Dallas, Texas. This is the place where President John F. Kennedy was killed, the place where they Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald. Political chicanery was deeply in the mix. The last day of President Kennedy's life, after perusing a Dallas, Texas Morning News publication, he, it said, told Jackie Kennedy, we're in nut country now. That's Dallas, Texas. Now it's being said more so arranged for President Obama to go to that place, Dallas, Texas, early next week. Well, we should expect the worst, but hope for the best. I'm meaning hoping he isn't harmed there in any way. Okay, we're coming down to our last seconds of the show, so I'm going to go on and take the show out with the record, and it's the record from our producer, India Morrell, entitled You Don't Deserve Me. So here we go. And we'll hear us next week and be back with some of the same issues and more of these issues. So till then, everybody have a good night.